you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts. Love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.
This is continuing coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Thank you. Maybe see the court now, sir.
22-117, the Commonwealth versus Karen Reed.
All right. Good morning, counsel. Ms. Reed, are all of the witnesses here, Mr. Jackson?
They are, Your Honor.
I'd like to hear from Dr. Russell first. Are you both prepared to?
Your Honor, I'm so sorry. I could not hear you.
I would like to hear from Dr. Russell first. Is that her name?
Dr. Russell, yes. The order would be five would propose based on scheduling. Dr. Russell, Dr. Wolf, Dr. Rachel.
Okay, then that's good because that's the order item.
Perfect. So,
all right. Do you have a CV for her? Good morning.
Morning.
Do you have a CV I could look at for her, please?
Let me see if I have it in my notebook. I thought I had. Yes.
And she has not written a report?
Not.
All right, let's bring her in, please.
Your Honor, before we get started, can I get an understanding? We started to say it at sidebar the other day, and you said you wanted that off to get to the witnesses. But I need a little bit of an understanding of what its expectations are. My understanding of voir dire, which this seems a little unusual in terms of the timing of it.
So the understanding of the voir dire is this is for the Commonwealth's motion to exclude this testimony. All right? That's what we're here for, the Rule 14 violations.
Is that the same with Dr. Wolf and Dr. Brinchman?
Well, I thought that would help both of you. The Commonwealth has nothing on that, and you say you haven't been able to even talk to them at all about this case.
That's correct.
So I want to find out if they have any credible, competent evidence to forward, so we'll have a voir dire on them as well. But so for Dr. Russell, what we're doing here today is there's an alleged there appears to me to be a violation of the reciprocal discovery obligations of defense counsel regarding Dr. Russell. So let's hear from her today to see what the appropriate remedy is for this violation.
So my intention is to ask her so I have the court understands my sort of guardrails. My intention is to ask her what her qualifications are, which is that's the basis for a voir dire. And that's where I'm going to stop. I'm not intending to ask her what her opinions are, conclusions. I'm going to ask her if she's come to opinions and conclusions, but I don't want to have to examine her concerning her full opinions, her full conclusions, what she's based those conclusions on. It's unfair. We've provided the defense everything that the prosecution, everything that we need to provide to them in terms of disclosure. They've got the equivalent of a report. They've got a summary of what she's going to testify.
When was that provided? My order was 1 week from the start of trial, right?
Well, we didn't, Your Honor, in fairness, they didn't even finish their discovery 1 week before the start of trial. So it's a little unfair for us to be put on the scene.
1 week from the filing of the certificate of compliance.
Well, I don't know when I can't remember. My co-counsel indication was the day before trial.
Okay.
So during the course of, trial is a dynamic thing. During the course of the trial, I did not know who Dr. Marie Russell was at the time that they filed their certificate of compliance. We then attempted to, and did, give them the reciprocal discovery that we were obligated to do after they filed their certificate of compliance.
When?
Within 3 days of that. We had been giving them information prior to that, but at least within 3 days of that. that. We've continued, so the record's clear, we've continued to get additional discovery from the Commonwealth in notices of discovery throughout the trial. They have not finished. In fact, during the trial, they interviewed Jen McCabe, apparently, had a full interview with her. Lieutenant Tully took a report, dated the report, and then they held on to that report until after she testified. The interview, the report, and the completion of the report were all done before her testimony.
Do you need to call her again?
Oh, Your Honor, I think the court understands. That's not my point. My point is not I need to call Jennifer McCabe back. I've done the damage that needs to be done on Jennifer. The point is...
I'm sorry, I missed that. You've what?
I've done the damage that needed to be done on Jennifer. I don't need to call her back. The point is that what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Commonwealth doesn't get to stand in the position of piecemealing and feeding us information, reports, discovery, seminal information about an expert that we did not know about, never met, never heard of. Within 3 days of that, we provide everything that we have about that witness to the Commonwealth. They can't then turn around and say, oh, well, it's all the defenses. So we want to have a voir dire, which means that the euphemism for that voir dire is we want to have two bites at the apple.
Okay.
We want to be able to completely cross-examine her, then go back to our expert, and if she testifies, cross-examine her again after consulting with our expert. That's two bites at the apple, and that's not fair. If the court wants to hear whether or not Dr. Marie Russell is qualified to testify about the arm injuries, that, I believe, is the parameters, the proper parameters of the voir dire, and that's what I'm prepared to do today. But I wasn't planning on this of her testimony because that's been provided. And I don't think Mr. Lally should be able to get into the substance of her testimony because he knows what the substance is because, like I said, that's been mine.
All right, so I disagree. I'm going to hear from the Commonwealth on this. Is it Ms. McLaughlin or Mr. Lally?
Your Honor, just briefly in regard to what counsel was referencing with Ms. McCabe, it was not a full interview by Lieutenant Tully. It was I don't have it on me at this moment, but I can give the court a copy of that report. But essentially it was Ms. McCabe met with Lieutenant Tully, looked at some video, and was asked a single question. That report wasn't available. I didn't have it until after Ms. McCabe testified, but it was given to counsel prior to Lieutenant Tully testifying, and there were no questions asked of Lieutenant Tully in regard to that. My issue, I wasn't asking for a voir dire as it relates to Dr. Russell, is that we first heard of Dr. Russell on May 21st, which was, I think, 6 weeks into trial.
Right, so that's what I asked, and you told me it was 3 days after the beginning of trial, Mr. Jackson.
No, Your Honor, I said this at sidebar the other day, and I just said it again today. I let the Commonwealth and the court know about Dr. Marie Russell 3 days after I learned about her. I had never heard of her. I didn't know who she was. We made contact. I determined that she would be useful for the jury in terms of specifically the injuries to John O'Keefe's arm. I then had one conversation with her, then immediately, within 3 days of that, turned that information over to the prosecution. So I didn't say that I gave this over 3 days into trial. That's not what I said.
All right, but you were ordered to do it. Ms. Gianetti, what was the date? What, you had 1 week from when?
The day before in trial. So it would have been, I believe, April 15th. So what we knew as of that day, you were required to turn over.
All right, I need to take a quick...
What? All right.
Commonwealth's motions. Never mind. All right, so the Commonwealth has moved that I exclude the testimony of Dr. Russell based on a violation of the reciprocal discovery obligations of the defense. So I do find that there is a violation of the reciprocal discovery obligations of Rule 14. Quoting notes, the court notes, told you all know, in the process of with the very integrity judicial system and confidence system, and full disclosure, all facts, frames of evidence. Ensure that justice is done. It is heritage functions the whole process for the production of evidence by the prosecution. So what we have to do today is a remedy for this violation, and that's why I did not call on their existence, Mr. Jackson. The alternative is she does so. Commonwealth and our appropriate scouts with so ask they to ask. So who is that? No, I'm not. This it was someone brought up to scramble. Higher offense. So, all right, so that's the... So why don't you get your voice up right now, okay? Yep. All right, go ahead.
Yep. Marie Russell, R-L-L. Okay. I am Marie Russell. Okay, well, I've had about at least 60 formal... initially, where I did my pre-med title, and so I went my pre-med, and then I had a life event and I took time off. During that time, another in my alarm, and so I did alarm, and I became full-time math. That was 1974. I did. Once I became a doctor, I attended a Boston grad in 1977. Yes, I did. I worked the city of Malden full-time. I did. So I took as many courses as I could from math training. included what they were engaged in. I was in photography and myself. And then and I also time a college. I did that time where I got a bachelor's science. So that was from Northeastern. I think it was a bachelor's science. So I decided that I didn't want to career. And so I then had a medical time for 4 years. Yeah, a doctor of medicine. And that's correct. I did. I did two exactly. One, but I did my first combined internship and resident. And I did that in at Lawtown Medicine, which is very prominent. And what I did are very busy.
That is correct.
Yes, I did my internship and resident there.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was a trainee, so I was all waiting. And yes, so I managed during that time period.
Did you indicated a second residency? Tell me about that.
Okay, so I still realized I had an interest in forensics. And I decided that I wanted to also train in forensic pathology. So I did a second residency in anatomic pathology, 2 years, followed by forensic pathology fellowship at the Los Angeles County Coroner's Office for 2 years.
And the years, if that's 4 years, that would be from 1991 to 1995, approximately?
That is correct.
Tell me what your experience was as a fellow at the Los Angeles Coroner's Office, Los Angeles County Coroner's Office.
Yes, well, it also was a very busy coroner's office, and so every day there would be cases. I probably did at least two cases a day, most days, and plus conferences and educational opportunities. But the interesting thing about being a fellow is they try to give you a wide assortment of cases. So, for instance, I not only saw numerous victims of gunshot violence and stabbings, but I saw numerous victims of motor vehicle accidents and natural death, overdoses. And then if there was an unusual case, it usually went to the fellow, you know, because the fellow was also being supervised. So.
Did any of those unusual cases, and we'll get more into this in just a second, but did any of those unusual cases include animal attacks?
Yes.
Did you become a professor, an educator at any point?
Yes. So during my 29 years at LA County Hospital, during the last 25 of those, I was a assistant professor or an instructor, but mostly an assistant professor. And that what that meant is that I was responsible for overseeing the care that was provided by the interns and residents. So when a patient would come into the hospital, the emergency room, they were oftentimes usually seen by the intern or resident, and then I would go and subsequently see that patient also. So, and that was in addition to my own cases. So I'd see my cases and their cases.
And that was at LAUSC, correct?
That is correct. And
can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
LAUSC, for those of us who are not necessarily familiar with it, is that associated with the University of Southern California Medical Center?
Yes.
That's the school, in other words.
Sorry. Yes. So it stands for Los Angeles County / University of Southern California Medical Center.
And that's where you were an assistant professor for the majority of the rest of your career.
Correct.
Were you also an assistant or an adjunct professor at Cal State Los Angeles?
Yes.
Okay. For how long were you an adjunct professor there?
I believe that was 4 or 5 years, and I taught criminalistics, forensic medicine there.
As an attending physician in the ER, in other words, a supervising physician in the ER, can you tell us what some of your duties and responsibilities included, especially as it pertains to trauma, and then I'll get more specific in just a second.
Okay. Well, so I would oversee the care of all the patients that came in during a particular shift. And that would include medical patients and trauma patients. And as I mentioned, it was a very busy trauma center. So we had lots of trauma patients, including the types of violence I described earlier that I saw at the coroner's office, but lots of motor vehicle accident victims because there was a highway there right nearby. There were a couple of highways. So a wide variety of accidents.
Did your supervision include assessing, diagnosing, and treating patients?
Correct.
In terms of the middle part of that, diagnosis, was part of your job to determine the cause of injuries or to at least assess the cause of injuries?
Yes, and I took that on a little bit more because I was interested in the forensics aspect of the injuries.
The forensic aspect?
Yes.
Okay. During your time at LAUSC, even after you left the Los Angeles Coroner's Office as a fellow, did you continue to stay in contact with the Coroner's Office and have relationship with the Coroner's Office as a supervising physician?
I continued to stay in contact with the Coroner's Office, and I used to attend their conferences as often as I could, not as a supervising physician, but as a physician and a graduate of their their program.
During your tenure at LAUSC, did you ever become the director of any programs at LAUSC?
Yes.
Does that include the director of Center for Life Support Training?
Yes.
What years was that, if you remember?
I don't remember. That
early 2000s, late 90s?
Yes, that sounds about right.
Okay.
And we would conduct lots of courses, including trauma life support courses.
Did LAUSC incorporate a quality improvement program?
Yes.
Within their institution?
Yes.
Did you become a director of that as well?
Yes.
So you were director of Center for Life Support Training and director of LAUSC Medical Center Quality Improvement, is that right?
The quality improvement was for the emergency department,
right.
Yes.
And did you also become the director for jail medical services?
Yes.
What is the association between LAUSC and the very, very expansive jail system in Los Angeles County?
So LA County Hospital was unique in that they many, many years ago developed a jail, what they called a jail ward, which was a combined inpatient, outpatient, and ER. So there was a dedicated jail ER. And that has been in existence for probably about 70 years now. And patients that were placed under arrest by either LA sheriffs, LAPD, California Highway Patrol, or any of the municipal agencies in the area, and I think there were about 70 or more municipal agencies, could bring their patient to the LA County jail ward where the patients would get treatment.
Ultimately, you became the director of that entire program, right?
Yes.
Did you also work with the State Medical Board of California in any capacity?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
For about 7 years, I worked part-time for the California Medical Board as a physician assigned to one of their enforcement teams. And I did that one day a week, and I did my other job at the county hospital the other 40 hours a week.
So you didn't take off time from your duties as an ER physician, as an emergency physician. This was in addition to you being an emergency physician.
That is correct.
Did you hold the title of chief medical executive for the California State Prison System, specifically at Corcoran?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So I retired from LA County Hospital, and I went on to move on to the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation.
And what year was that? Did you make that transition?
So 2018 is when I started for the state prison system.
Okay.
And I worked there for 5 years as director of their medical service in Corcoran.
I'm sorry. So for that prison, within that system, you were the chief medical executive for the entire agency, correct?
That is correct. Right. For the entire prison.
Understood. Are you board certified in emergency medicine?
Yes.
Are you a member of the National Association of Medical Examiners?
Yes.
Are you a member of the American Academy of Forensic Science?
Yes.
Do you have any publications in the area? And I'm going to be very specific because you've been relatively widely published. Is that right?
Some people would say yes. Some people would say no.
More than a couple of publications.
Correct.
Peer-reviewed journals, correct?
Yes.
I want to focus your attention on animal injuries. Have you been published in the area of animal injuries specifically?
Yes.
Do you recall those publications?
Yes, they had to do with law enforcement dog bites.
Did you draft an article or co-author an article called Managing Law Enforcement Dog Bites in the ER?
Yes, I was a co-author.
1996?
Sounds right.
And that was a peer-reviewed article?
Yes.
Ultimately published?
Yes.
And ultimately available to be cited by other doctors and studied by other doctors, correct?
Correct.
Did you also author or co-author an article entitled Law Enforcement Canine Dog Bites, Injuries, Complications, and Trends?
Yes, I did.
Is that in 1997?
Sounds right.
Is that also peer-reviewed?
Yes.
And that publication was also available for other physicians throughout California and throughout the country to refer to for the study of animal bites and dog bites, correct?
Dog bites, yes.
Dog bites. Concerning animal injuries, during the course of your professional experience, how many patients have you seen, diagnosed, and or treated with animal injuries, including dog bites and scratches, if you had to estimate?
Many hundreds.
Would you say it's over or under 1,000?
I would say it's over 500. I don't know because we didn't keep really good records back in the earlier days.
But it's safe to say you've seen hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dog bites and scratches.
Yes. In my 29 years at LA County Hospital, yes. And my dog bites I took care of and dog bites that the residents took care of, yes.
And you've even published articles and studied, not just seen them, but studied dog bites and dog wounds, correct?
Yes.
Have you qualified as an expert previously in other courts as in emergency medicine?
Yes.
Have you qualified as an expert expert in other courts in forensic pathology and wounds.
Yes.
Has that been in both state and federal court?
Yes.
Doctor, were you asked to review certain materials related to this case?
Yes.
And that was in furtherance of coming to, if you could, come to an opinion or a conclusion about injuries to the victim in this case, a person by the name of John O.
Yes.
What did you review in anticipation of your determining whether or not you could come to an opinion or a conclusion?
So I reviewed hospital photographs, autopsy photographs, an autopsy report, grand jury testimony from the medical examiner in this case. There may be some other
I just want to ask about that. Do you have notes with you as to what you reviewed?
No.
Okay, so when you say there might be other, you don't...
Well, if
he tells you what you reviewed, you'd know it?
I would recognize it.
All right, but I want to hear it from you. You don't know of anything else that you've reviewed?
This is sort of forced to Jackson.
Okay.
Can you think of anything else, doctor, besides these?
Autopsy photographs, autopsy report, neuropathology report, toxicology report, and the grand jury testimony.
Okay, so as you recall, the items that you reviewed include an autopsy report by Dr. Scordibello, correct?
Yes.
A neuropathology report by a doctor named Stonebridge, correct?
Yes.
Toxicological reports associated with the autopsy?
Yes.
Grand jury transcripts from Dr. Scordibello?
Yes.
Photographs of evidence items, including a gray sweatshirt?
Oh, yes, yes.
And autopsy photos that were taken attendant to the actual autopsy?
Yes, and photographs that were taken in the hospital, and I reviewed the hospital ER record also.
So in addition to what you just listed, there's also hospital photos separate and apart from the autopsy photos, is that correct?
Yes.
And those hospital photos showed the injuries to Mr. O'Keefe's arm, is that right?
Yes.
And you also reviewed emergency room records that are attendant to his initial acceptance into the emergency room on January 29th, 2020, correct?
That's correct.
Based on your review of all of those materials, were you able to confidently come to any conclusions or opinions about the nature of the injuries suffered by John O'Keefe, specifically as they relate to John O'Keefe's right arm?
Yes.
What is your opinion and conclusion concerning those injuries?
Those injuries appear to be consistent with an animal attack.
Can you be more specific in terms of the type of animal, or are you relegated to simply an animal attack?
Well, they are consistent with a large dog attack. There's a combination of both what I consider bite wounds and scratch wounds on the arm. There were also some puncture wounds in that shirt.
And
I'm sorry, puncture wounds in the shirt?
Puncture hole in the shirt.
And on what do you base the opinion that the injuries are consistent with dog bite or scratch marks?
Well, the patterns. There are several patterns of parallel wounds that appear to be superficial scratches that could have been caused by nails or could have been caused by teeth. There are different angles on the arm and different locations on the arm, but they're generally oriented in a specific direction. And there's also an area, the distal forearm, which is close to the wrist, which shows what I believe is an arch area of teeth marks.
And what's the significance of the arch area?
Well, so the arch would be the front area of the jaw of the animal, you know, or the dog in this case, where the teeth are tend to be close together and curved. There's a curved pattern to the configuration of the teeth.
Let me have just a moment, Your Honor.
Yes.
Doctor, I want to show you a series of photographs. Can I approach you?
Yes.
First, can you describe whether or not you recognize what's depicted in that photograph? Have you seen that photograph before?
Yes, I have.
Is that part of what you reviewed in coming to your opinions and conclusions?
Yes.
What is that a photograph of?
So this is a photograph of the decedent's arm near the elbow. And do you want me to describe what it shows?
Just briefly.
Okay. And it shows wounds.
Okay. Your Honor, I would ask that be marked as next in order.
All right. So for this voir dire, we'll have separate evidence, right? Is this an exhibit number in the trial already?
It has not been marked yet, so I'm fine with starting over sort of for the purposes of the voir dire process. How are the purposes to do it?
So this will be a separate voir dire with separate exhibit, yes.
So it's going to be exhibit one?
Yes.
One. Your Honor, I want to move this along. This has been marked, but I think... I'm so sorry.
No, go ahead.
This one of the three has already been marked, but if just for consistency, I'd rather mark it additionally for voir dire.
Yes.
Need a separate record.
Can I approach?
Yes.
This one's already been marked, but I'll remark it.
And if you'd tell me the exhibit numbers that they are.
disputes. So you're putting these in now? There's no objection, Mr. Lally?
For purposes of this, no.
Okay, so we'll mark these now, but...
May I approach?
Yes.
The one with the label 22858 on the bottom has previously been marked in the trial. I would ask that this be marked as next in order for the voir dire.
But what I want is the exhibit number at the trial.
Oh, I'll get that right. I believe it's exhibit 19.
Okay.
19?
That's correct.
It's 19.
Okay. And is the third one also in evidence, you said?
Two of the three have not been marked. As soon as the medical report is ready.
She's ready.
May I just establish the foundation?
Yes.
The following two photographs that I just showed you, doctor, do you recognize those?
Yes.
Did you also review those in terms of, in furtherance of coming to your opinions and conclusions?
Yes.
Do they also appear to be different photographs of John O'Keefe's arm?
Yes.
I remove the condition of photos, Your Honor, for purposes of one year.
There's been no objection to, so they're in. They've already marked.
I just need to know which one's two and which one's three. May I approach?
Yes.
Okay, that's. With court permission, may I publish
yes.
Exhibit two for voir dire?
Yes.
Is this a photograph of Don O'Keefe's arm?
Yes.
This is one of the several photographs that you reviewed in coming to your opinion conclusions?
Yes.
I want to ask you a couple of questions about this. There should be a laser pointer on the desk.
Okay.
Can you explain for the jurors what it is about the injuries that assisted you in coming to your opinion conclusion that this is from an animal attack?
Okay, there's several patterns here. So, for instance, let's look here right near the elbow, the exterior part of the elbow. There's these two linear marks, which... appeared to be from upper teeth, and two punctures below those, which are superficial, meaning they didn't go very deep into the skin, but they appear from the lower teeth. So that's one pattern. There's another pattern close to the shoulder, which shows parallel marks, these two, and maybe a third one in the middle, parallel marks that are oriented at a certain angle, and these are superficial wounds which are consistent with teeth marks. They also could be possibly consistent with nail marks, but...
With what?
Nails from claws. Claws, yes.
All right.
We have some more here, similar, from obviously different teeth involved or different claws. And then over down here, closer to the wrist, we have an unusual pattern of at least four striations, the way I see it, at least four striations that I believe are caused from the teeth towards the front of the mouth near the arch. It appears that there's an arch pattern here. So,
in a dog attack or in an animal attack, in your experience, let me take this one down. Let's cover the ground on the three exhibits that we've already marked. Can we take a look at exhibit one? Is this just a may I publish, Your Honor? I apologize. Is this just a close-up of the same injuries?
Yes.
And these appear to be consistent with what you just testified to in terms of either teeth or claw marks, especially as it relates to the area closest to elbow.
Yes.
And looking at three. May I publish?
Yes.
Is this a close-up view of area closer to the wrist that indicated those parallel, you used the word striations?
Yes.
Right. These appear to be taken, attended to autopsy as opposed to other photograph, exhibit two, that was taken in the hospital. Is that right?
That is correct.
All right. And would the time difference account for the slight change in the nature of the wound?
It could.
Photograph of the wound, I guess?
It could, or different technique, yes.
Okay, let me take up. Did you take into consideration the lack, in coming to your opinion conclusion, the lack of other injuries, for instance, fractures, broken bones, or deep bruising, soft tissue injuries?
Oh, yes.
How did that play into your opinion?
Well, so, of course, I considered, what else could have caused these wounds, before coming to my conclusion. And so I wanted to rule out other things, and there were no significant major bodily injuries outside the head. There was nothing, there were no fractures of the long bones, the chest, the pelvis, the arms. So, so having seen hundreds and hundreds of car accident victims and people hit by cars, I ruled that out very quickly.
Okay, and in terms of the injuries that you could see, especially as they're attended to the arm, based on everything that we've discussed today, is it your opinion, based on a reasonable degree of scientific certainty, that those injuries are consistent with an animal attack as opposed to a motor vehicular pedestrian incident?
Yes.
All right, Mr. Tulalli.
Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning.
Let me take you back to, you were talking about some police training that you had received when you were in the academy or while you were working with the police department here in Massachusetts. Is that right?
Yes.
What kind of training did that training system?
Well, I attended and graduated from the standard police academy at that time. And then I took additional courses that were offered from the Massachusetts Criminal Justice Training Council. And these were taught generally by experts in their fields. And there was on a variety of subjects that are listed in my CV, included, the hit and run accident investigation, forensic.
Doctor, in reference to your training as it pertains to hit and run accident, what did that training consist of?
Oh, well, mechanisms of how accidents occur, mechanisms of how to determine, what vehicle was involved in an accident. There, it was a long, long time ago. But determining if people were struck by vehicles, what vehicle was involved, or if there was auto versus auto accident, what vehicles were involved.
And I don't mean to belittle this training whatsoever, but is it fair to say that was relatively rudimentary training that you received in the academy?
Probably. I would not. Yes. Okay. Probably.
If you don't have any training in crash reconstruction or anything like that, correct?
That is correct.
And am I correct in you indicated that you're board certified in emergency medicine? Is that right?
That's correct.
And so you're not board certified in forensic pathology or anatomical pathology or any kind of pathology?
That's correct.
And the last time that you worked as a coroner, when was that?
The last time was in 1995 when I was doing autopsies for the coroner's office. I have since, though, consulted on numerous, in some cases from the LA coroner's office.
What about 30 years ago? Was that about right?
For autopsy, yes.
Now, have you ever testified in a case in which either Ms. Jackson or Attorney Little were counsel?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
And when was it that you first were contacted in a reference case?
The first contact was May 15th.
May 15th of what year?
May 17th, excuse me, of this year, 2024. Yes.
And went through a list of things that you were provided and you reviewed, and you mentioned hospital photos, correct?
Yes.
Autopsy photos, is that correct?
Yes.
An autopsy report, is that correct?
Yes.
Grand jury testimony from the medical examiner, is that correct?
Yes.
A neuropathology report, is that correct?
Yes.
Psychology report, is that correct?
Yes.
And I also remembered some photos of clothing items, is that correct?
Well, yes, a shirt. And
anything else?
Yeah, hospital ER record.
Hospital ER record.
Yes.
Anything else that you can think
of? No.
Did you ask for anything else to review?
No.
Were you told of any other material that was available for your review that you weren't then given?
Well, I requested that I focus in on the wounds, so I didn't ask for a lot of material in this case.
But fair to say that you were looking for anything and everything, material to the wounds that you were asked to look at, correct?
Please say that again.
Fair to say that you would want to look at anything and everything that was related to the wounds that you were asked to look at, correct?
Yes.
So did you make any specific requests as to what material you were provided, or were you just handed some material or forwarded some material and you looked at what you were given?
No, I requested that I have the autopsy photographs, the ER records, the ER photographs. I requested those.
Now, you mentioned some articles that you had written that were published back in 1996 and 1997 related to dog bites. Is that right?
Yes.
Are those publicly available articles?
Yes.
And in those articles that you wrote, you were talking about law enforcement bites, correct?
Yes.
So law enforcement canine bites typically involve what we call sort of a bite and hold tech. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
So is there a difference between through your experience and the hundreds of dog bites seen, is there a difference between what you would observe from a dog bite from a law enforcement canine versus a domesticated dog?
Well, yes. Now, the study, one of those studies was over 700 dog bite wounds. And there were two techniques used at that time, bite and hold, and later on, bark and hold, or bark and, bark and alert, or something of that nature. So there are different techniques. But yes, this is specifically answer that question, which was, are they generally different from regular domestic dog bites? Yes.
Now, did you write a report in regard to your opinion that you testified to here today?
No.
Why not?
I don't think there was much time, and I didn't know if I was going to be actually testifying.
How long would it take you to write a report?
I wasn't asked to write a report, excuse me.
Were you asked specifically not to write a report?
No.
Now, at any point in time, did you ever look at anything related to Mr. O'Keefe's head injury?
Oh, yes.
So you reviewed reports in relation to that, correct?
Yes.
Do you have any opinion as it pertains to that?
I would rather defer to the pathologist and neuropathologist on that.
So who contacted you about this case?
I contacted a district attorney that I had worked with in the past. We were discussing a different case, a case that I autopsied in 1995. And I mentioned that I heard that there was a dog, there was a case in Massachusetts that might have been being handled by one of his colleagues, his former colleagues, and that there was an issue of whether something was a dog bite and that I might be able to help in that case, to clarify.
And so when you were provided this material, what is it that you were specifically asked?
To look at the wounds and the reports and the materials that were sent to me and render an opinion.
And so before you had even been provided in any material, before you had even looked at anything, you had already heard information related to there being a dog bite involved in this case, correct?
I had heard that there was a controversy, that there's some certain wounds could have been a dog bite versus perhaps inflicted by a motor vehicle. That's what I had heard.
So I'm really trying to get at, doctor, is sort of the timeline. Okay, so you hear about this. When was that?
Sometime just before May 17th.
Sometime just prior to that, you hear about some controversy in a case in Massachusetts involving a dog. On May 17th, you get reached out to by Pacific.
His name is John Lewin. He's an attorney in the L.A. District Attorney's Office.
And then who did you talk to after that?
I reached out to him. I said I might be able to clarify. And then he reached out to Mr. Jackson, I believe. And then Mr. Jackson contacted me.
And not asking specifically anything you spoke about, but at some point the discussion came specifically to dog, correct?
He sent me the materials. He asked me my opinion.
You mentioned the materials, asked you your opinion. When did you provide that opinion?
Probably the next day. Yes, I know it was the next day.
The very next day on May 18th, you provided an opinion?
Yes.
Was that opinion provided written fashion, orally? How was that provided?
Orally.
So you reached out or someone shortly before May 17th, spoke to Mr. Jackson on the 17th, received all the material, and then had an opinion by May 18th.
Yes.
You didn't write any of that down?
No.
Now, beyond the materials that you were provided, what else were you told about the case?
I was told that the victim was a police officer. The decedent is a police officer. I was told that the defendant had been charged, and I was told that that there was a controversy about whether or not these injuries had been caused by motor vehicle. And I was also told, and I read in the medical record, that the decedent was found outdoors, I believe in the snow, and hypothermic.
Now, in regard to what reviewed, you didn't review any investigator reports, is that correct?
That is correct.
Review any witness statements, is that correct?
That's correct.
Review any lab reports as far as from the forensic lab or anything like that?
I reviewed the toxicology report.
Beyond that, any other?
If it was part of the autopsy report, I reviewed it.
You reviewed everything attendant to the medical examiner's file, is that correct?
Yes.
Nothing from the lab beyond that?
I don't believe I did.
Now, this first instance when you say you heard about it, how did you hear about it?
Well, I believe it was via a headline that I received in my email from the Boston Globe headline. You know, it was some kind of there was some kind of interesting case, and I got it as an email, and I looked into it.
And when was that?
Well, that was that week in May, a few days before May 17th.
Subscribe to the Boston Globe online?
I did at that time. I have not renewed it.
How long had you been a subscriber to the Boston Globe?
I'm going to allow it.
Probably a year or 6 months, 6 months to a year.
There never any headlines or anything else that you saw about this prior to that week just before May 17th?
Not that I paid attention to.
I've never.
Anything further, Mr. Jackson?
Nothing further.
All right. So since this is a voir dire, I get to ask questions, doctor. So
oh, yes. Okay.
I just have a couple of questions for you. I don't think I really heard you. So could you tell me again what your opinion is and to what degree you hold that opinion?
Yes. These injuries in the arm are, my opinion is that they are the result of animal bites or scratches.
And do you know what kind of animal?
Oh, yes, most likely dog, large dog. And I'm very reasonable, very sure to, what's the word I want? Medical certainty. High degree of medical certainty.
Reasonable degree of medical certainty.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, and another question. So I received information that you also viewed all reports associated associated with Chloe, a dog's prior bite history. Did you review those?
No, I don't recall ever seeing anything like that.
That you also reviewed the UC Davis DNA testing results submission forms?
No, I don't recall seeing them.
Okay, any follow-up, any questions based on my question?
Not for the Commonwealth, no.
Right, you are all set, doctor. I don't know yet whether you'll be okay. We'll try and let you know. Are you going to be around today?
No.
Okay. We'll let you know as soon as we can, okay?
Okay, okay. Thank all right, thank you.
So I would like to hear argument on this witness before we hear the other witnesses. So, and Ms. Tianetti, I asked you the other day whether she reached out to you or you reached out to her, and you said there was an intermediary. But my concern was whether she came out of nowhere and reached out about this case, and that seems to sort of...
It wasn't Ms. Tianetti, it was me.
Okay, all right. So the question I asked was answered pretty much by this witness, whether she saw something and decided she wanted to come forward. All right, it's the Commonwealth's motion. What are you asking me to do? Again, I found a violation of Rule 14. And there are two concerns here, the competency of the witness's testimony, how much she can testify to, whether she should testify at all. What is it you're asking me, Mr. Lally?
Your Honor, I'm asking that the witness be excluded from testifying at the trial for the violation of Rule 14. Specifically, I believe it's Rule 14A6. This is a witness, as the court picked up on, that reached out, albeit through an intermediary, with reference to just sort of discovering or coming upon this case in several weeks into the trial. It is concerning given the fact that the witness represented that she had a subscription to the Globe Online, received word of this, and the first time that she had ever seen it or it had grabbed her attention was in that first week of May when, as the court is well aware, there's been widespread media coverage, particularly through the Boston Globe, for years at this point. The limitations of the testimony, it's also concerning because the disclosure from counsel indicated, again, as the court had noted, I didn't want to get into too much as far as for purposes of this voir dire, but there was additional material that was indicated in the disclosure that the witness had reviewed, including the UC Davis related to the canine DNA or the lack thereof, as well as, forgive me, the dog bite history of that specific dog, which also I would note for the court includes photographs of what a dog bite from that specific dog looks like. And that specifically apparently was not provided to this witness, who's then opining on, inferably at least, that that dog was the cause of these particular injuries. However, was not shown specifically anything to do with that bite history as far as by way of reports or photographs. So that juxtaposed or coupled with the immensely late disclosure. I mean, we're talking about at least the sixth week of trial by the time this witness is even mentioned. Not on the defendant's witness list, not mentioned at any point in time during the pendency of the case, and then sort of pops up in the middle of May, and to the point that the limited amount of material or information that's provided by counsel as far as disclosure opinion doesn't come until today. So for all those reasons, Your Honor, the Commonwealth is requesting that her testimony in its entirety be excluded from this trial.
More raw courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed is coming up from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Press subscribe so you don't miss a minute.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.
Per Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. Workplace stress is now a leading cause of declining mental health, with 61% of the global workforce feeling it more than ever. You can't escape work, but you can take small steps to take care of yourself. A walk, some sun, a favorite song. Therapy is one of those steps. Ongoing support to build resilience for whatever your day throws at you. Balance is tough. Getting help shouldn't be. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts. Love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts. Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts. Love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts. Love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.